Good afternoon. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order. Time is 1:33 p.m., March 19, 2014. With me today is Senator Meyer, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator Stedman. The other two members of the committee will not be attending. They have other commitments. Up today, we have two bills on the agenda, House Bill 263 regarding the extension of the Senior Benefits Program, followed by House Joint Resolution 25 regarding service-related diseases for Vietnam veterans. So we'll start with the first piece of labor, House Bill 263 by Representative Hawker. And he has a trustee aide coming before us. And if she could introduce herself for the record, who she represents, and as this is the first hearing on this bill, take us through the bill, please.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. Cecile Elliott, staff to Representative Hawker. Representative Hawker regrets not being here to present the bill today. He's homesick. House Bill 263 extends the senior benefit program from June 2015 to June 2021. That's a six-year extension. This is a needs-based program established in 2007 and provides monthly cash assistance to residents age 65 years or older. The beneficiaries receive a monthly cash benefit of $125, $175, or $250, depending on their income. Approximately 11,000 of Alaska's lowest income senior citizens will be served by this program in the current fiscal year. There is a document in your files from the department that goes through the history of senior benefits under various names and various criteria. I'd be happy to go through that. Okay. Or not at your...
And if you can give us just a synopsis of it, and then it'll be people listening at home, so it's nice for them to follow along.
From 1972 to present, there's been four significant changes, and also the division director, Ron Kerr, is here. The longevity bonus program became the senior assistance program, the senior care program, and currently the senior benefits program. There were changes made largely regarding cost of the program and prioritizing the most needy to receive a benefit, which is where we're at today.
And the intent today is to, of course, hear from the sponsor, take public testimony, but we'll be setting this bill aside as this is the first reading. And if there's no bumps in the road with this piece of legislation, we'll be bringing it back Friday. Do you have any other comments on the bill? Do we have anybody signed up for testimony in the LIOs, call-ins? We'll just have a brief at ease here while we... Back on the record here, we'll have initial questions from committee members, and then we'll continue on with the public hearing. Do we have any initial questions, Senator Meyer?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember this was quite a not controversial, but a difficult question for us back when we took this up, because, like you said, we were getting away from longevity bonus and this was kind of the substitute for that. How has this program been working out?
The recipients, there's 11,000 recipients today, and that's percentage-wise of our seniors receiving that. So in terms of success, I guess the division director here could comment on that. It's been a successful program in that it's serving that many of our seniors who are in the greatest of need financially.
Okay, very, very good. I guess that's my question was, that, you know, is that I'm sure anything is better than nothing. I was wondering if that is taking care of their basic needs. Do they pay taxes on these benefits, do you know?
No.
No?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, no.
Okay. Okay, and if they're in a state-operated facility, Mr. Chairman, is it okay?
No, you go ahead.
If they're in a state-operated facility, or if their care is subsidized by the state, do they still receive this benefit?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, no, they do not.
Okay. And let's see, I think, Chairman, I saw somewhere where there's six people involved with this program, six employees. Does that sound right?
On the physical note, six yeah. Full-time.
Yeah, I was just going to ask what they do.
And so we have a lifeline coming forward. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent.
For the record, my name is Ron Creer. I'm the director of the Division of Public Assistance in the Department of Health and Social Services. There are six positions attached to this program. We're not requesting new PCNs. Those are existing staff that have been in our operating budget in providing services for this program since the senior benefits payment program was established several years ago. And to your question about is it successful? It's successful because it is helping people to stay in their homes, in their community, and people living safely in their community, in their home, is one of our key priorities. So to the extent that we're serving almost 11,000 elderly Alaskans, low-income Alaskans, I think it has been very successful. In many of these folks, about 56% of these folks are on adult public assistance, so it augments that little bit of money they get for adult public assistance, and another 30% also receive food stamp benefits, and all of those things I think indicate that these really are families or individuals who are have some serious needs for to meet their basic needs on a monthly basis. So we feel very good about the
well. Thank you. And again, I'm trying to remember because I know it was a tough thing what we did going from the longevity bonus. I think this was kind of the substitute, and one of the arguments was, well, everybody gets longevity bonus. This will just be on a needs basis, and some people were concerned that, especially the elderly, their pride is such that they may not say they need the money, and I was just wondering, do they have to re-enroll each year, or once they're on it, they're on it?
Through the chair, Representative Meyer, there's an annual renewal process for individuals to in order to maintain their eligibility. And that's oftentimes is coordinated. If they're on other programs, it would be coordinated with the renewals of those programs as well.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, then I'm assuming that's why you need that many people, six people, is to kind of make sure that these 11,000 recipients all are indeed eligible and
through the chair, Representative Meyer, exactly. On average, we estimate you need, and this is a relatively straightforward program, we have kind of a calculus that we use to determine the staffing levels necessary to support these individuals. And these staff are also trained too, so that they can keep an eye on their SNAP program or food stamp program and their APA program as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chick, do you have any initial questions?
No, I just think it's interesting that asset levels are not counted for eligibility. Can you explain kind of the logic? And I'm supportive of the program, just on typical similar senior programs, it seems like the only criteria isn't income.
This program is, the chair representative, Chichi, you're correct, this does not have an asset test. Because we have so many of the individuals on this program that are either receiving Medicaid, that's about 66%, over 7,000, and they're also, numbers of them are receiving benefits through food stamps and APA. All of those do have assets that Medicaid no longer does. But I think the reality of it is in most of the United States, at least when we're looking at individuals in needs, they are more asset poor than they are income poor. So I think that in general the recognition was that there may be seniors out there that have have assets, but oftentimes those assets are dedicated to things like end-of-life events and really is not considered to be so asset-rich that they wouldn't need the assistance. Adult public assistance and the food stamp program, if the individual is elderly or disabled, the maximum asset limit they can have is $3,000.
A couple others, just so, and I can understand why a senior in a Pioneer home or Alaska Veterans home or may not be eligible because they're receiving significant state benefits already. But in the case of my private nursing home or public or private institution for mental disease, why were they separated? Those may be folks that are the most in need.
Typically, those individuals that are in a care facility, they're already receiving some level of stipend. When the senior benefit program was reauthorized several years ago, there was even a kind of a, for lack of a better word, an amendment that included an increase in stipends for people that were in institutionalized settings. So they get a little bit of cash that they can use, pin money to buy certain personal items and stuff. But most of our assistance programs, the level of care is being met by that facility, so there's not benefits going directly to the recipient. I hope that captures it for you.
Okay, and I'm just looking through the numbers and some of the supportive documents. It looks like there's not really a lot of rhyme or reason. I just look at my own Kenai Peninsula borough. There are 1,000 recipients of services of the 11,000, which seems high for a borough of 54,000 people, but since it's needs-based, it just means that there's more of a income challenge in some of these communities, I assume.
Through the chair, Representative Senator Machichi, excuse me, that I think that it's representative of the portion of the population that are seniors in each one of our boroughs. 1,000 does seem high. It's scattered over a pretty big piece of territory, and oftentimes these individuals might be clustered in larger communities as well, but I think that it's probably representative of the senior population on the peninsula overall. And it is an aging population. It's a growing population.
We have
testimony on.
Yeah, we have one fiscal note from the Department of Health and Social Services for $23 million in general funds, FY15, with estimated cost in the out years. The funding for FY15 is already in the governor's budget, and I think that Chairman next to me hasn't removed it yet, so it should still be there. And we have no one signed up to testify in the audience. We have no one in the LIOs or called in. Darlin, Marie, you want to?
I put myself down for comments.
You want to come up and comment?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So Marie Darlin's coming up. If she can introduce herself for the record, who she represents, and she has backup support with her.
I'm Marie Darlin, and today I'm representing both the AARP group, which was part of them were just here yesterday, and looking at some of the issues that we were concerned about, a few that were still maybe lagging behind where they should be by this time, but nevertheless, that's beside the point. What I want to comment on this, other than the need to actually continue the program, is the fact that because I live in Fireweed Place down here, which has seniors of all different levels of the income levels, and they get different, some are on Medicaid, some get different help from the different state programs. But we find that there are a lot of those seniors who still are not taking advantage of all the programs that you mentioned also are listed and things like that, that it's hard to even get them to apply for some of these services, which they should be taking advantage of. And so it goes back to the fact that many of our seniors just don't want to be applying for state services, and yet they should be, because many of them need it. They really do. They are at the point where they should be. So we try to encourage them to really look at what their needs are and so forth, and where can they go then to get whatever help they do need. And, of course, we know that any help that they get where they're still living independently or trying to, that's going to keep them out of any of the state facilities or nursing homes, which all of us know costs far, far more. So it's, again, comes back to the preventive issue, which is what we really try to encourage people to look at it that first before they start thinking about trying to get into a home or a nursing facility. With that, then, we just say we really do support this because it is one more way to provide them the help that they need.
And for the record, my name is Denise Daniello, Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Aging, and I believe you have a copy of our letter in your packet. And the commission has supported the senior benefits program from day one. And we continue to be strong advocates for this program. It really helps those who are most in financial distress and makes a big difference. I hear from people all the time about how important this program is, especially as the price of energy rises, cost of food, health care. This is not a large sum of money that people are receiving, but it does help make a difference. And as we were talking about earlier about the age of people who receive senior benefits, I think the average age for a senior benefits recipient is 75. The oldest is 107. And as people get older, you know, their risk for declining health increases, and so they start spending down their assets for health care. And what we have found that oftentimes what happens is that when a married couple enters into life, you know, as a retired couple, the husband a lot of times gets sick. The wife cares for him. They start spending down their family's assets, and then he passes, and then she's left as a widow. So I think that explains the other demographic point about the senior benefits program is that almost two-thirds of these individuals, these recipients, are women. So this is widowed women who are receiving this benefit. So we think it's good public policy, and we ask for your support.
Okay. Any questions for the two ladies?
Mr. Chairman, the numbers show again it's tough to be a man. But I'm very supportive. You know, I was supportive of the longevity bonus program, which I remember the challenge and all that. It's a tough place to live, especially as a senior. It used to be a mayor in a small town, and it's really important to keep not only seniors where they can afford to live here. I don't want them to move somewhere else, somewhere where life is easier. It just makes an incomplete community when grandma's living somewhere else. So anyway, very supportive. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing nobody else from the audience, no call-ins, any final comments from the bill sponsor before we set this bill aside?
Cecile Elliott, staff to Representative Hawker. Just want to convey thanks from Representative Hawker for hearing the bill today and appreciate moving the bill along.
Tell Rep. Hawker we set it aside for further review. He'll have heard that before. Okay. Thank you. We will set this bill aside and plan on bringing it back Friday. We'll probably have a fairly short meeting Friday just for the members' schedule. Next up, House Joint Resolution 25 by Representative Ledoux. First hearing on this bill, the intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set it aside for further review. And we have not Representative Ledoux, I can assure the public of that, but we have a trustee aide. And if he can introduce himself for the record, who he represents, and we will go ahead and hear this. There is a zero fiscal note on this particular legislation, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Thomas Brown, staff to Representative Ledoux, who apologizes for not being here. She is not sick, but her 98-year-old mother is, so she's flying back from seeing her over the last couple days. Before I begin, I'd like to give you a quick some background information on H.J.R. 25. In 1991, Congress passed the Agent Orange Act, which forced the VA to make a presumption of exposure for any Vietnam veteran who displayed symptoms related to that herbicide and then to provide them with medical or financial benefits. In 2002, the VA redefined what made a veteran eligible for those benefits, choosing to limit them to only those veterans who had served on the ground, dismissing all of the offshore Navy and Marine personnel from coverage. This was done without any scientific, medical, or legal reasons. Over the last 6 years, the Institute of Medicine, the health arm of the National Academy of Sciences, has issued four separate reports, including one conducted at the request of the VA, all of which concluded that there are no legitimate reasons to exclude members of the Blue Water Navy from receiving benefits related to Agent Orange exposure. The Blue Water Navy is referring to all those Navy and the Marine personnel who are stationed offshore in the waters off the land of Vietnam, as opposed to in the rivers and inland waterways. There is currently a bill before Congress, H.R. 543, the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act of 2013, which would reverse this arbitrary act of bureaucracy, returning medical benefits and compensation to the veterans who have earned them. It has 174 co-sponsors from both sides of the aisle, including our own Congressman Don Young. H.J.R. 25 does nothing more than urge Congress to honor our veterans and pass the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans Act of 2013. D.C. has an obligation to provide our veterans with the medical and financial assistance they deserve, and we need to hold the members of Congress accountable when they fail to do their duty. Should H.J.R. 25 be passed by this legislature, copies of the resolution will be delivered to our congressional delegation, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Speaker of the House, Vice President Biden, and President Obama. There are potentially hundreds of Blue Water Navy veterans in Alaska that could be in need of assistance due to their exposure to the toxins they were exposed to during their time of service. It is the responsibility of the state of Alaska to jog Congress's collective memory and demand they fulfill their debt to our veterans. And with that, if you have any questions, I'd love to try to answer them.
Committee, do you have any initial questions before we go to the public hearing?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I may, yeah. Do we have any idea how many veterans this would affect?
In Alaska. Chair, Senator Meyer?
Yeah.
Specifically in Alaska?
Yes.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, there are approximately 609 veterans in Alaska who were members of the Blue Water Navy. However, since the VA removed them from coverage, we could have 609 that were exposed to Agent Orange and therefore in need of assistance, or we could have none. We don't really have any way of knowing.
I see no other initial questions. We'll go to the public hearing portion. We have anybody signed up in the room? We've got an off-net. If you could start by introducing yourself and who you represent and speak to the bill, please. John Rossi.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is John Rossi. I am the executive director of the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veteran Association, and I'm calling today from Littleton, Colorado. Our association is an educational 501c3, but our job has been to put together materials that would educate both the general public as well as the legislators about the issues regarding the change in the VA law. Mr. Brown gave a very good review of that. So we are the key organization that has members that will definitely directly be affected by this by this bill. Excuse me.
Okay, thank you. That is the only one in the off-net that signed up. We have nobody from the LIO signed up to testify, and we have nobody in the audience here to testify further. So we'll go ahead and close the public hearing. We'll come back to the committee for any final questions from committee members. Final comments by bill sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, no final comments other than I'd urge you to pass the bill out of committee and tell Congress they need to suit up and do the right thing.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. Our next meeting is scheduled Friday, the 21st. There is bills previously heard posted intent is to bring this back under bills previously heard. I'm not expecting any oppositions, but we just, as a general rule, don't move any legislation on the first hearing. With that, we are adjourned.